from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Well, Chiefs fans, the 2017 season is officially in the books with a couple of guys that you know have just won a Super Bowl. We're here. They are celebrating on the field, and we're going to give you our instant reaction and talk about that. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you're subscribed. Spread the word. And just a heads up for tomorrow, we have Therese Paylor with us. We talked just before the Super Bowl, and great conversation. Check that out on tomorrow's show for Tuesday. I'm Ryan Tracy, founder of Rogue Analytics, as well as a writer over at Chiefs Digest.
And I'm Chris Clark, and I am the managing editor of LockedOnChiefs.com. Thank you for joining us. Lots to talk about in this game.
Man, yeah. It didn't quite go the way that I thought it would, but there's a lot to like about the way they did this. There's a lot to take away from it for Andy Reid. And I'm very impressed with what the ex-Chiefs did. They drove this team to this championship. Did you ever think this was going to happen when Carson Wentz got hurt?
No. I never had faith in Nick Foles, and obviously I was wrong. Super Bowl MVP deserves all the credit in the world. He played a fantastic game tonight.
I agree with you. And if he hadn't gotten that, I would have been upset. Is it official? I hope so.
Yeah, it's official.
Okay, it better be. Because there are still some things about this game that were some serious problems. First and foremost, and you know, I'm not one to bitch about the refs too much, but the announcing was driving me insane. I'm not sure exactly what the thought was going into the game, but it was clear from the folks in the booth calling this game that they really did not expect the Eagles to be in this game. And I think in a lot of ways, they kind of owe the Eagles an apology for that. But maybe I'm alone.
You know, I thought that they were a little biased one way or the other, but I did think that, you know, throughout the game, it was very obvious that the Eagles were going to be in this one. They came to play tonight. Nick Foles showed more guts and more determination to play a huge game than I ever expected that he could. So hats off to them. Fantastic game for Philadelphia.
Yeah, man. And I think if there's one overriding theme that I think pretty much everything that happened in this game kind of illustrates to me is the difference between Doug Peterson running the show and Andy Reid running the show. The aggression, the naked aggression at times, that fourth down play, the pass back to Nick Foles, which, by the way, didn't get a whole lot of love on Twitter or on the broadcast, but Nick Foles sold that play. It was great. The acting job that he did approaching the line as though he was trying to talk to his lineman and just kind of sliding out of the way, it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was. It was a fantastic play call. Fantastic thing for Peterson to call in that moment, and for them to execute it like they did was impressive.
A lot of guys on display in this game. Who stood out to you the most?
I don't know that you can go away from Nick Foles. The whole reason I picked so hard against Philadelphia is because of him. I just did not think he could play on the stage, and he definitely proved me wrong. Congratulations to them. And, you know, there were several plays that I thought could have gone either direction. Two touchdowns for Philadelphia in particular that I thought were probably going to get called back just because of a catch rule that they don't seem to understand currently.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does. And, you know, maybe I fall back on old terminology for what used to make yourself a catch, but a player in control of the ball that crosses the plane is the end of it. If he gets 2 feet down as a pass catcher like Ertz did, he becomes a runner, period. It's really not that complex. I think the over analysis of it is what the problem is. You think they did?
No. I think the league has messed it up several times this year to where you just don't have a clue as to what they're going to call.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's an overanalysis of the little details. I think the pass that was in question before, it was clearly a pass as well. 2 feet down with total control. Yes, he lost control, but he regained it as he went to the ground. This is a thing that in years past wouldn't have even been a question.
Well, he regained it, but he didn't have But when he regained it, he didn't get both feet down. So that's what the where the question came on the first one. You know,
he had already gotten both feet down with control.
That's true. And I completely agree with that statement at all, completely. But like I said, they have mucked up what is actually a catch. And I'm glad that they made it look a lot clearer tonight. And I hope that they figure it out going forward, because it's obviously something that they need to get figured out as a league.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the bigger things that go on through the offseason with coaches, owners meetings, excuse me, that we have to hope gets a more simple clarification, because that's really the key to making this something that doesn't trip teams up in the future. You know, that and the whole forward progress thing.
Well, there's always going to be that.
You guys, it stood out to me tonight. I thought it was clear that the Patriots made the right adjustment coming out of the half, and were keen on targeting Gronk and getting Gronk going. And I thought it worked for them. And I thought that was probably the wisest thing that they did. I was surprised that they got as much pressure on Foles as they did too. So kudos to them for that. But I think really the individual players that stood out to me the most were all on Philadelphia's side. Corey Clement, what can you say about the kid? Nobody wanted him as a draft pick, over and over and over. Injury history, the whole nine yards. And to do what he did tonight puts him in with only one other player to go over 100 yards in a Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's Terrell Owens.
Yeah, he played a fantastic game. The thing that you saw in this game that was amazing to me the most was the lack of defense and what you thought this game was going to be. It just completely was different than what you expected it to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you expected a hard-fought game where there was going to be, you know, the defenses were going to be taking control of the game at times. I didn't see that on either side. One punt throughout the entire game.
Yeah, and I saw a couple of my followers and your followers as well talking about how, you know, sarcastically defense wins championships, making fun of that. Well, technically, yeah, it does. Because if either team decided to play decent defense tonight, this wouldn't have been a game.
Well,
because the defenses were poor across the board.
Yeah, and they were poor, and not only were they poor, but you also have a game where they just set the NFL record for most yards in a single game.
Yeah.
In a Super Bowl. Nonetheless.
And, you know, and I tweeted it early and I still feel this way. I thought that the Eagles DBs came out and set the tone early. And I think that was a key for them. I think they faded down the stretch, but I think they were one of the strengths that this game got built on for the Eagles, allowing themselves to play from ahead and not get themselves in a situation that they weren't prepared to come back from.
What, you didn't think Malcolm Butler played a good game?
I mean, hey, I was going to bring that up here in a little bit, but I'm interested to see what that story is. My guess is going to be some kind of, you know, violation of team rules or NFL rules or something during the week. Kind of a hectic week. But I want to come back to him in a little bit, because we have to talk about some of the free agents that played in this game, or free agents to be that played in this game.
I think you have to talk about the fact that he didn't play at all. I think that there was something that he found out before the game. Is the only thing I can think of. Maybe it's a violation of team rules, but I'm sorry. Bill Belichick just doesn't seem like the type that's going to bench a guy for a violation of team rules going into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and there have been other people who have made giant mistakes Super Bowl week. Eugene Robinson, I'm talking to you. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Maybe there is some kind of serious instance that happened that we'll have to take into account, but you know, I thought the battle between Jeffrey and Gilmore was great. We talked pregame, and I said Jeffrey was going to have a game that was going to be crucial, his portion of it. And I think Gilmore stepped up and took that to heart. Although I think as a whole, I still think Jeffrey probably came out on top of that matchup.
Yeah, no, Jeffrey played very well. He got shut down kind of in the second half, though. Didn't really have anything going in the second half for him. Gilmore really kind of stepped up and shut him down really for most of the second half of the game. As soon as they started moving him around on Jeffrey, Gilmore really didn't do much. And that really could have painted the Eagles in a bad situation, because Torrey Smith didn't have a great game either.
You know what? And I've heard other people say that. I thought he actually came up with a couple of key plays. I liked what Torrey Smith did in terms of being not the deep threat that you think of him as, but that guy underneath who got some dirty yards and got a couple of first downs that I thought were really important. I thought he came through in his role pretty well.
Well, I thought he had some good plays, but I don't think he did what he was wanting to do. He dropped at least two balls that I can remember and maybe a third. And that's really hard as a player to have those types of plays, but you've got to make them all in this type of game. And I think he left plays on the field personally, but you know, it's the Super Bowl. It is the ultimate game of where you want to be and what you're playing for. So, very intriguing to see how things go moving forward for both teams, because they're going to have a lot of free agents they got to figure out what to do with. And what do you do with Nick Foles? Because at this point, he's the backup for $7 million next year. Do you really want to pay him?
If you think you can get back, I have to look at the rest of their free agent class, but if you think you can get back, yeah, you pay him. I don't see why not, because yes, Carson Wentz got hurt during the season. He should be back, but barring any kind of setback for Carson Wentz's recovery, or let alone another injury, Nick Foles proved the paradigm of keeping a veteran quarterback specifically for this reason. And so I don't see any reason why they wouldn't pay him.
And I'm not, you know, it's possible they do. And if they do, great. But I can also see a situation where they would try to trade him, because you're never going to get a higher value for a guy like that.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And there are so many teams now that need, not would like to have, but need quarterback leadership, not just as somebody who's competent, but leadership. You may be right. I got to think that the trade market's going to be fairly significant for a Super Bowl MVP, whether you meant him to be there or not.
Well, and how crazy is that, that he could be a Super Bowl MVP and still be the second best QB on his roster and be gone?
Well, what's even crazier is that he was a backup quarterback in Kansas City last season, a season where Andy Reid had to convince him not to retire. Yeah. I don't know what the order is going to be, but I got to think Nick Foles calls Andy Reid pretty quickly.
You would have to think so. You know, he's been through a lot in his career, and I do think that the announcers pointed out very well that they kind of really changed the offense for him. I'm not trying to take anything away from Foles, but they did run a different offense when he was playing, and they played to his strengths, which is what you have to do as a coach. So, you know, I'm not trying to downplay what he did. I'm just saying that, you know, that's one of those things that you have to make changes, and they did.
Yeah, and I have to give Doug Peterson credit, and I know I mentioned it a few weeks ago, but let me ask you again, point blank. We don't have to go into detail, just your gut reaction. Has Doug Peterson surpassed Andy Reid as a football coach in the NFL?
No.
Okay.
No, I really don't believe that. I think you are looking way too far into one Super Bowl victory than I care to.
Okay,
I think he's done a good job, but I don't think he's surpassed Andy Reid. And, you know, if he has sustained success, maybe that's a different story. But I'm not going to say he passed him because he won a Super Bowl.
Okay. I happen to disagree. I think that's one of the few things that trumps consistency and a career of success, like you said. Normally, I would agree with you. You know,
but see, you're making an argument that one Super Bowl makes you a great coach. How many coaches out there have won a Super Bowl that aren't great coaches? Because there's a ton of coaches out there that have only won one Super Bowl.
And that's fine. But I'm talking about Doug Peterson. I'm not talking about other coaches. I'm talking about a guy who took his version of the West Coast offense and completely adapted it to one guy, lost him mid-season, had to totally reconfigure it, and got his team to a Super Bowl in what, his second year in charge of an organization? I find that remarkable. And I think the cap, and he got into the, you know, NFC Championship game and lost. Okay, I wouldn't even brought it up, but getting to a Super Bowl and now winning one, I think that's a significant pause. That's just the difference in my point of view.
Well, that's fine, but I think you're wrong.
Well, I would argue, folks, let us know what you think on both sides, please.
Oh, I already know where you're going to, I already know how that's going to go. I'm going to lose on that one. I guarantee it.
Okay.
How many people were down on Andy Reid after the playoff loss to the Titans? They're not going to let it up now. And I'm not trying to be argumentative. All I'm saying is that you can't take one Super Bowl win and say he's a better coach. Like I said, if you have sustained success, that's a different story. But, you know, he does have a fantastic defensive coordinator that I think would have changed Kansas City in Jim Schwartz. But
you'll get no argument from me.
You know, he's not doing it on his own.
I understand. Well, let's move on then, and let's talk about a couple of guys. I mean, LeGarrette Blount's going to be a free agent from Philly. Not many other guys that I'd really look at. Maybe a Patrick Robinson. I don't know. That's a corner that you need depth in, but I don't know that he can really provide it. They play a 4-3, so their linebackers I'm not really interested in either, just because I think they play out of position if they were to come to Kansas City. So, you know, if you flip it and you look at New England, now we have a couple of things like the guy you talked about before.
Malcolm Butler.
Yeah. And I know this whole him not playing and whatever the reason turns out to be kind of throws a big wrench into, you know, what you can project for him going forward. But I mean, if it's not a felony, is it somebody that you're interested in? Do you think they can afford him? Do you think they should even try?
I don't think they can afford him. And I think it goes back to the same type of thing that you look at, who else you could try to afford. And you know, we kind of talked about, or I actually kind of talked about this with Seth on Twitter a little bit. Maybe you go try to get a Kyle Fuller. Well, if you go get a Kyle Fuller, you're going to have to sign him to a big deal. Well, then how are you going to pay Kendra Fuller and how are you going to pay Marcus Peters? Can't have all three of them. And I think that's kind of where you're going to be at with going out and getting Malcolm Butler as well. And I think Malcolm Butler's probably going to get more money than Fuller would.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Until this whole hiccup with him not playing tonight, maybe that's something significant that lowers his value. I think there are ways to do it. I could be wrong. But I think corner is such an important position.
You're going to tell me that you can spend $12 million a year on three corners?
No, I'm not. I'm going to tell you I think it's spend eight or nine, though.
Who are you going to pay eight or nine in that group of three?
Whoever you sign this year, you're going to try to keep Peters below that when you extend him.
No chance Peters is below that.
No, I'm sorry. I mean below the 10, 12 million that you were talking about.
And I'm saying there's no chance he's below that.
Okay, I think you're wrong, but it'll be what it is. But as the cap goes up, it gives you more space. Having Kendall Fuller at his right now, knowing that you can extend Peters before you have to look at his contract, I think that gives you an opportunity there. And we don't know what the cap's going to do. I think it's projected to go up another 12. It could be a little less, could be a little bit more, but we'll see. As they clear some space, they might be able to roll over some as well. But I think Butler's a guy that you got to look at. And I don't think he's the only guy on this Patriots roster that they got to look at as well. A guy who played a fairly significant role tonight should be a free agent. I want to double check it just to make sure that I'm right. And he is, according to Over the Cap, Danny Amendola is going to be a free agent. He's like 32 years old, but what you saw from him, particularly when he went up against man coverage and his ability to separate with the aspect of losing Albert Wilson out there, if you do lose Wilson or you choose not to bring him back, because Amendola is something they should go after.
It depends on what he's going to cost. I think he's going to cost more than Wilson.
Well, currently he's on a $1.7 million contract, so I can't think he's going to cost you much more than that.
Well, I guess I didn't realize he was on that contract. I thought he had a much more expensive contract that he signed.
Yeah, he's on pretty cheap at this point. Yeah. His base is 1.25, you know, with bonuses. His cap number's at 3.1 overall, this season. So I think you can have him at that rate, maybe even a little less, but probably, you know, after another Super Bowl, probably not. But I think 1.7 is definitely manageable.
Well, the issue that you're running into with him is injuries, and can he stay healthy? So the risk you could probably afford to take. I don't know that I would really go down that path, but it's a possibility, I suppose.
Well, I only bring it up because I think they're two players that the Patriots may be to the point where they're going to let go. The other position that I like, they have two free agents at the running back position. And what you see for New England is how they use running backs per matchup. It's not like, yes, it's a committee, but it's not, there's a set starter and there's a set backup, that kind of thing. Both Rex Burkhead as well as Deion Lewis are going to be free agents. I got to think they make a push to return at least Lewis, but maybe Burkhead as well. But if not, is the Charcandrick West role in Andy Reid's offense up for grabs? Do you think that's somebody they should go after?
I mean, it's possible, but I really don't think you're going to go out and spend much more than vet minimum on a guy that is probably not going to carry the ball that much. I don't think Andy Reid's going to change the way he wants to do things. I think you're going to have a two-back system with Hunt and Ware. So having that third guy, I don't think is going to be as big of a deal.
That's fair. Well, I think it'll be interesting seeing how this comes out. Now that the season is over, we're going to turn towards the draft. Congratulations to everybody that was associated with this win, especially the ex-Chiefs. But we'll start looking at the draft as the days go by here. Pretty soon we're going to do our position reviews. We have a great interview coming up. Therese joined us. Therese Paylor, the Kansas City Star. I know you all know him. We'll have him here in middle of the week. Just recorded with him the other day. Pre-Super Bowl as he was about to get ready for the event. So keep an ear out for that. Keep subscribed. Hit us with any questions you want at either hashtag Locked On Chiefs mailbag to the Locked On Chiefs account or at the phone number. Leave us a voicemail at 913-777-4457. Parting thoughts, Chris. Who was your – obviously, Foles played great, but who was the guy that kind of surprised you?
Probably Nelson Agholor. Clement did too, but Agholor, I wasn't expecting that kind of game from him. And I think he stepped up at big times for Philadelphia and really made, really helped them out.
I have to agree with you. That looks great. And my guy would be Jenkins. I knew he was going to play well, but man, he surpassed even my expectations. I thought he played well in man. He played well in zone. I thought he had a presence in that secondary, knowing that Tom Brady wants to throw. That was kind of key to this game. And congratulations to the Eagles and to him. And folks, congratulations to you. One more season under the belt. We start getting ready for 2018 with the Kansas City Chiefs, as well as all the draft and free agency starting tomorrow. So thanks for listening to us today. Happy Super Bowl to you. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review. And reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTracyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.